The Fingerprints of God. Chapter 1. Time for Honesty. I've been putting off writing this down for a while now. I've wondered repeatedly if it might just be easier to pretend for you all, and ultimately, for myself. That I should pretend that there aren't arguments for God that make me sit up at night in fear and wonder. I mean, I could just keep talking to atheists and agnostics, claiming I don't believe, and continue down the When Belief Dies road I'm currently on. I'm very comfortable watching the channel grow as it becomes more and more atheistic in its direction and audience base. Or, and this is the hard part, I could be honest about where I am and allow When Belief Dies to be the vehicle that I use to explore the landscape around me. This will cost me subscribers and supporters, and it'll cause more rejection to be placed in my corner. I accept the costs, as I think it's more important to be as honest as I can be about where I am at any given moment. So, I'm not going to stop the show for fear of rejection. Rather, I'm going to allow this space to be one in which I explore the world around me, looking at the claims people put forwards and how they impact my life and thoughts, all while sharing the journey here as I go. Ready? Let's begin. Chapter 2. Consciousness. We are conscious agents, and when we stop to reflect, we discover that consciousness is the foundation upon which everything we experience, think, and are arises. Through reflection, we witness an impenetrable basis of existence through which it is not possible to pass. Consciousness is fundamental to us as people. We cannot get around it, but we can witness that it is there before thought, before feeling, and before action. To me, consciousness mirrors the Judeo-Christian concept of a soul, the very being of an individual, and the place from which decisions and actions impress themselves. Consciousness is the very fabric of who we are. Consciousness makes me wonder if we have souls, and if we have souls, could there be a God? Chapter 3. Will. Consciousness preloads the space within us, the space in which will emerges, and it is will that pushes us to take actions that ultimately lead down specific paths. We are not ships within a harbour, but rather we are ships out at sea. Taking the analogy further, I often wonder if God is the wind and sustainer. This life we live is the waters we navigate. Consciousness is the sails that propel us, and our will is the rudder that guides us. As a rudder on a ship can't make a ship fly, so we don't possess complete free will. Rather, what we have is the freedom to will. This is freedom to make informed decisions based on our circumstances today, the knowledge that we possess at this moment, and the desires we wish to gratify in the future. Freedom to will makes me wonder if we are created agents, sustained and in motion, and if this is true, then could the sustainer be a God? Chapter 4. Reason. Reason, it is argued, is an evolved function in higher life forms that pushes forward the ability for said life form to make sense of and live within this world. The problem, reason posits, is that if evolution is simply descent with modification, then we have no way to know if reason is in fact leading us to truth. Some cognitive psychologists, such as Donald Hoffman, wonder if reality as we consciously perceive it is in fact an illusion, simply the best attempt that our brains are capable of to try and make sense of and navigate this world. This raises the problem of reason, and no one else has put this problem in terms that I've found as challenging as C.S. Lewis in his address, Is Theology Poetry? quote, "Long before I believed theology to be true, I had already decided that the popular scientific picture, at any rate, was false. One absolutely central inconsistency ruins it. It is the one we touched on a fortnight ago. The whole picture professes to depend on inferences from observed facts. Unless inference is valid, the whole picture disappears. Unless we can be sure that reality in the remotest nebula of the remotest part obeys the thought laws of the human scientist here and now in his laboratory. In other words, unless reason is an absolute, all is in ruins. Yet those who ask me to believe this world picture also ask me to believe reason is simply the unforeseen and unintended byproduct of mindless matter at one stage of its endless and aimless becoming. Here is a flat contradiction. They ask me, at the same moment, to accept a conclusion and to discredit the only testimony on which that conclusion can be based. The difficulty is to me a fatal one, and the fact that when you put it to many scientists, far from having an answer, they seem not even to understand what the difficulty is, assures me that I have not found a mare's nest, but detected a radical disease in the whole mode of thought from the very beginning." End quote. Reason, as an absolute, makes me wonder if we are agents linked to objective functions outside of ourselves, and if we are, then could there be a God? Chapter 5. Morality. I wonder if there is an objective moral order linked to something outside of the material world I am held within, and if there is, then could it be that God has indeed made himself known? For if we know that our actions, although doomed to go askew, are taken based upon decisions which we know scale towards good and evil, then could it be that we as the action takers are also guilty? The only way for us not to be guilty would be for us to relinquish our personhood and dissolve ourselves to the level of non-rational creatures, and then no deliberate action would have ever been taken, and thus no guilt. But cognition informs us that we do in fact act rationally, even though we don't have a choice in what we are, and I wonder if these acts link to something outside of ourselves. I claim that it is objectively wrong for someone to sexually abuse children. I do not think this is subjectively wrong, I think this is objectively wrong. So it appears that I think there are objective moral laws outside of our subjective persons, and because of this, I wonder if there could be a God. Chapter 6. Image Bearers. Has God made himself known? We must all sit within our own answer. For what it is worth, I answer that maybe he has, and tremble at the reality of what that means if true. We make decisions at every moment of every day. These decisions push us down paths that accumulate and change us. Our sense of self requires us to recognize the other, and in doing so, we also recognize that there must be better and worse ways to be and act within this world. On the subject of self, C.S. Lewis in The Problem of Pain has the following to say. Quote, "From the moment a creature becomes aware of God as God and of itself as self, the terrible alternative of choosing God or self for the center is opened to it. This sin is committed daily by young children and ignorant peasants, as well as by sophisticated persons, by solitaries no less than by those who live in society. It is the fall in every individual life and in each day of each individual life, the basic sin behind all particular sins. At this very moment, you and I are either committing it or about to commit it or repenting it. End quote. I wonder if we are becoming, to use biblical language, either the sons of God or imageless bearers, and that this happens through the decisions we make. There are moments within our lives when we have to select a specific action. We have the freedom to will, and within this freedom, we can survey the paths before us and act accordingly. Not every decision is made like this, but these calculated actions lead to uncalculated actions which are made within our subconscious. We form neural pathways piecemeal over time, and this changes the character of our being, the very impression of our soul or self upon this world. Our actions lead us down roads which ultimately form us. I wonder for myself, could this be the road to hell? Oddly, I've seen this more and more clearly as I've explored value and time preference within the monetary structures that have formed various societies across history. The desires we have for instant gratification in all quarters of life hamstring society because they dehumanize the individual. I close knowing that what I've explored here frustrates many, if not most, of my listeners. But I also understand that these are simply my reflections, and if I don't share them, I won't be being honest with who I am and what I think. We've heard a lot from C.S. Lewis today, though I offer no apology because he's always been a hero of mine. I think it fitting to close with one final quote, once again from his book, The Problem of Pain. Quote, "They wanted, as we say, to call their souls their own. But that meant to live a lie, for our souls are not in fact our own. They wanted some corner in the universe of which they could say to God, this is our business, not yours. But there is no such corner. They wanted to be nouns, but they were, and eternally must be, mere adjectives."